Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Jubilant Pharmova Limited's Q4 and full year FY26 earnings webinar. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the management's commentary concludes. Please note that this webinar is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pankaj Dhawan. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Inba. Ladies and gentlemen, good day. From the management today, we have Mr. Priyavrat Bhartia, Managing Director, Mr. Arjun Bhartia, Joint Managing Director, Mr. Harsher Singh, CEO, Jubilant Radiopharma, Mr. Chris Preti, CEO, CDMO Sterile Injectables, Mr. Arun Kumar Sharma, CFO, Dr. Tushar Gupta, Head Corporate Strategy, and Mr. Anuj Mohnot, Head FP&A. I would like to remind you that some of the statements made today on this webinar could be forward-looking in nature, and a detailed disclaimer in this regard has also been included in the earnings presentation. Now, I invite Mr. Arun Sharma for the opening remarks.
Thank you, Pankaj. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. In Q4 FY26, revenue grew by 19% on a year-on-year basis to 2,290 crores on the back of growth in radiopharma and allergy immunotherapy, CDMO sterile injectable, and generic businesses. EBITDA increased 2% on a year-on-year basis to 363 crores. EBITDA margin decreased year-on-year by 272 basis points to 15.7% due to shortage in supply of spec products in radiopharmaceuticals and under-absorption of costs in CMO Montreal. Normalized PAT stood at rupees 129 crores. Normalized PAT decreased year-on-year due to increase in depreciation and interest costs. Overall, for the full year FY26, revenue grew by 14% to rupees 8,280 crores on the back of growth across all business units, particularly CDMO sterile injectables. EBITDA for the year grew by 8% to rupees 1,326 crores due to improved performance across all segments except radiopharmaceuticals. EBITDA margins decreased year-on-year by 99 basis points to 15.9% due to lower production at CMO Montreal, particularly in the second half. Normalized PAT for the year grew by 7% to rupees 442 crores due to improved operating performance of the business. Going forward, we expect growth momentum to further strengthen in FY27. In terms of EBITDA margin, this shall be the story of two halves. As production at CMO Montreal stabilizes, we expect EBITDA margin to start strengthening from H2 FY27 onwards. With this, we have come to the end of opening remarks. We are now happy to move to Q&A, but before we do that, we would like to show you our Line 3 and 4 at our Spokane facility through a video. As you are aware, we are expanding our manufacturing capacity by investing in the state-of-the-art isolator fill-finish lines at Spokane, U.S., and Montreal, Canada. This strategic deployment of advanced technology positions us to capture high-value biologics market in the CDMO sterile injectable business. Please enjoy the video. Thank you.
Over the last several years, we made one of the most significant and timely investments in the history of Jubilant Hollister Steer. Lines 3 and 4 are not simply about adding capacity, but rather they represent a deliberate shift in the company we are building. This expansion positions us to succeed in one of the fastest-growing and most complex segments of the market: biologics and advanced sterile injectables.
What differentiates Line 3 and 4 is the infrastructure behind them. These lines were designed from the ground up to handle high-value, highly sensitive biologic products, where control, precision, and robustness matter most. Designed as a standalone purpose-built facility with isolator-based filling at the core, we can maintain higher aseptic controls and narrow process windows, capabilities that are essential for complex biologics, and only a few companies in the industry have these today. Just as importantly, These lines support both liquid and lyophilized drug products, including programs that require lyophilization development, optimization, and commercial scale-up, not simply execution of a transferred cycle. That combination allows us to take on programs earlier, de-risk them through development, and then commercialize them at scale with confidence.
As the technical complexity of our work has increased, we've been very intentional about evolving our workforce and operating model alongside it. Lines 3 and 4 support products with more sophisticated process requirements and significantly higher value APIs. Our people strategy focuses on attracting niche talent and building agile teams that can adapt to regulatory and client demands while fostering a culture of innovation and compliance. We've invested deeply in our people, building a workforce with stronger technical depth, seasoned operators, skilled engineers, and expanded technical support functions. This isn't just about headcount. It's about having the right skills, experience, and decision-making on the floor to support development-driven programs and scale them reliably.
Customer demand reflects this shift. In today's regulatory and supply chain environment, customers are prioritizing partners who offer U.S.-based manufacturing, deep regulatory experience, and the ability to handle complex biologics. Line 3 is filling up with complex, high-value biologic programs, and we have growing confidence in the Line 4 acceleration in a similar manner. These are not transactional, simple fills. We're building strategic, collaborative relationships with our partners while delivering more high-value batches.
Recently, we had the opportunity to onboard one of the world's largest oncology products. Programs like these require advanced tech transfer, tighter risk management, and close partnerships across teams. Once commercialized, we have a robust, durable process and a high return on investment. That's why these programs are so strategically important and deliver lasting value.
Stepping back, Line 3 and Line 4 mark a clear shift from a capacity story to a capability story, from a volume-driven CDMO to a complex, specialty sterile injectables platform. This repositioning supports higher technology transfer and development service revenues and long-term sustainable, sticky partnerships with world-leading pharma companies. We're aligned with evolving compliance standards, operating on the right side of policy with U.S.-based manufacturing, and progressing ahead of schedule as Lines 3 and 4 both fill. This is a critical step as we execute towards Vision 2030.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now move to the Q&A segment. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may click the raise hand icon located at the bottom toolbar on your screen. When called upon, you will receive a prompt to unmute. Participants may also send text questions by clicking on the Q&A tab. We will wait for a moment until the question queue assembles. We take our first question from Shrikant Akolkar of Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I hope I'm audible. I have a first question on the CDMO business. We have done very well. So can you please provide some update on the Line 3? And if you can talk about the 10 plus molecule pipeline that we have built up, how many of them are the biologics, how many of them are the small molecules, and when the commercials will start? Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for the question. So specifically for Line 3, we have approximately 10 plus products, as you mentioned, across multiple formats and vial sizes undergoing tech transfer as we speak. Specifically, commercial production, as to your question, will commence in late FY27, subject to FDA approval of these products. Of this mix of these 10 plus products, approximately 80% of them, the majority of them, are these complex biologics. And just to divert a little, the value of these complex biologics is customers, they have tighter aseptic processing windows, stringent environmental controls, specialized filling capabilities. All these create durable long-term relationships with the customers because they create high switching costs and there's more value with these high complex biologics. As a result, we are commanding pricing premium for these products. And to your question, we expect to reach peak revenue in line three in 1.5 to 2 years earlier as projected, and achieve an 80 to 90 million specifically for line three.
Understood. And you also have mentioned about one large oncology product. So is that a commercial product? And also, it seems like biologic, but if you can talk more about the product, that would be great.
Yeah. Yes, as I mentioned, thanks again for the follow-up question. As I mentioned in the video, we're happy to share that we've onboarded one of the world's largest oncology products. It is a commercial product, and we are happy to, that is one of the 10 products and our multiple customers we have on line three. Specifically, just to go a little further to your question, we expect to reach full utilization of line three once these products do go commercial. And as I mentioned earlier, peak revenue attainment of 80 to 90 million, 1.5 to 2 years, 2 years earlier than originally projected. Thanks again for the question.
Sure. Thank you. And my second question is again on Radio Pharma business. So I heard that there will be the cost pressure in first half FY27. So can you please talk about the kind of cost pressure that we will see in the first half and what will change in the second half in terms of cost and in terms of growth? Thank you.
Vikant, thank you for the question. This is Rashir speaking. The difference between the first and the second half of the year for us is the availability of stock for our spec cold kits business driven by manufacturing at CMO Montreal. We're manufacturing product now at that site, and we expect it to release mid to end Q2. That's going to give us uplift in Q3 and Q4, where we're going to be at our regular run rate. But in the first half, because we don't have those spec sales, we will see a reduction in revenue in our highest margin products, which creates the margin pressure that you're talking about.
Understood. And any guidance for FY27 or for the consolidated business? How should we think of the growth? Because it is a heterogeneous business. But at the consolidated level, any guidance?
Look, we expect that the business will grow in the sort of low double digits, and we expect margins to remain in the 38 to 40% range.
This is very helpful. Thank you so much. I'll join back with you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Vishal Manchanda of Systematics. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity. My question is on the API business. So you have been trying to kind of get opportunities around NCs or maybe tie up with innovators on the API front. If you could share if there is any progress on those lines.
Vishal, good evening. Thanks for your question. This is Tushar. So yes, you're right. We have been trying to get customers onboarded on the custom manufacturing revenue, as you mentioned. So we are making progress, and we expect the custom manufacturing revenue mix to drive the utilization and profitability going forward. As we speak, we are maintaining our EBITDA margin at 15%. But in short to medium term, you should expect that to go up, driven by custom manufacturing revenue.
Have we onboarded any innovator clients? Like, if you could share a number as to how many innovator clients or how many products we would have got from innovators, and what's our current capacity utilization on the API business?
So, I think as of now, we can't share the number and the names, given the confidentiality agreement that we work under. In terms of utilization, I think we do have good capacity to accommodate some of these large pharma customers on custom manufacturing. But that's the only information I can share for now.
And this would improve your overall margin in the business, and we should see revenues kicking in FY27?
you should see revenues kicking in FY27, and the additional revenues will also drive the margin profile for the API business.
And on the discovery business, is there an improvement in the overall macro environment? Do we see this business to get stronger? Because we were earlier actually more excited about the discovery business than the overall all other segments within the group.
Thanks for the question again. So if you look at our FY26 numbers, our discovery business grew 15% to now north of INR 650 crores. And the margin also grew proportionately. EBITDA also grew proportionately. I think in the short term, we expect some competitive intensity in the large pharma customer segment, right? However, demand condition in the biotech is expected to improve, right? So can you imagine there is patent cliff in the industry, and as a result, money is flowing into the discovery segment to drive the innovator pipeline. But yes, biotech segment is expected to improve. Large pharma will see more competition. But I think overall, we are on track to deliver our FY30 vision for the CRO segment.
Sorry, you said you're on track to?
We're on track to deliver the FY30 vision for the CRO segment.
Okay, got it. And one on the generic business, should we see sustained growth there and margin expansion?
Yeah, so if you look at our generics business, the revenue grew by 13% this year and margin grew by 250%. So we're now double-digit EBITDA margin in our generics business. I think looking forward, we expect, again, the sustained progress towards our 2030 vision. So you should expect the margin to be close to 15%, the revenues to be in line with what we committed for 2030 as part of our vision.
Thank you very much. I have more questions. I'll join the queue.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may click on the raise hand icon. We've received a text question from Gaurav of Bandhan AMC. I'll just read it out. The question is, since there are multiple business heads, CEOs, all independently running their own segments, be it Radio Pharma, CDMOSI, CRDMO, Allergy Immunotherapy, how is the capital allocation decided at the group level to ensure each segment gets it fair share of the resources?
Gaurav, thanks for the question. In terms of capital allocation, you know, we have a ROC threshold that we look at. First and foremost, any capital investment has to cross that ROC threshold for us to invest. In terms of the investments that we have in the immediate future, in the near future, they've pretty much all been spelled out to investors. We don't foresee any capex over the next 2 years other than the investments we've already spelled out, which is basically line 3, line 4, line 5, and PET manufacturing. These are the four large buckets of investments that we're going to be making. They are very, very good economics and very good return profile. And at this point, we don't foresee any investment for the next 12 to 18 months over and above this. But if and when it comes to us, we look at it from an ROC lens. And, you know, if it's accretive to us from an ROC lens, then we go ahead.
Thank you. Our next question is from Vinay Jain of Karma Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, Vinay.
Yeah, so firstly, hearty to see again a good sort of ramp up coming through in the CMO line. Had a couple of questions on firstly the Montreal plant. So if you look at, we have given the spoken numbers, so that means that at an EBITDA level, Montreal would have had a loss of close to 150 crores for the year. So just wanted a guide path on to how are we looking at, firstly, the business turning around for Montreal, especially with Line 5 coming through. And at the same time, how do we look at eventually like loss reduction and turning profitable on that front?
Ashit, would you request you to sort of take that, please?
Thanks. And Vinay, thank you for the question. Vinay, as we look at Montreal, right, the last year, including exceptional items, it was about a 200 crore loss.
Okay.
Based on the run rate for that business, we expect that the next financial year will look similar to the last financial year. The site is in production, but the way we book, it has to be on sell-through.
Mm-hmm.
We expect to see a meaningful reduction in that in that P&L at, through cost cutting that will take place this year, which will be impacting next year in 28, right? So 28, you should see a meaningful reduction in losses. We're going to start to see revenue from line 5 come in FY29, right? As we start the media fills there.
Okay. So loss reduction in FY28, and can we like then hopefully break even in FY29?
I don't think we're guiding on specific numbers for 29 at this stage.
Got it. And one question on the Radio Pharma pipeline. So there also a couple of things. So MIBG again, there seems to be some delay in terms of filing and subsequent approval and launch timelines. And also on launches for which were planned for FY27 now seems to have gotten pushed to FY28. So can these, like again, MIBG coming through and the set of product launches which you were expecting in FY28, how are we looking at FY28 as a whole for the Radio Pharma business, both from a revenue and profitability perspective, because we've just guided that this year as well, we are looking at a low double-digit revenue growth with margins in that 38% to 42% range. So just wanted some color on FY, how are we looking at FY28 as well?
Thank you, Vinay, for the question. And let me break it into its three parts, right? The first part is MIBG. Right now, we continue to expect that we will file MIBG's NDA in the second half of FY27. It's important to realize that this is a full NDA, not a 505B2 or an ANDA. Mm-hmm. And to that extent, we have to be really careful and thoughtful to make sure that we position ourselves for a easy regulatory path post-approval. For now, we have high confidence in both our supply chain and the regulatory path that we have chosen here, and continue to be on target for an H2 FY27 filing. When we talk about the rest of the pipeline, right, while one product in FY27 got pulled out, I think what we have to recognize is we've taken the entire pipeline out of CMO Montreal and put it in a third-party CMO network. Most CMOs don't have comfort or experience with radiopharmaceuticals, and particularly the reducing agents used specific to radiopharmaceuticals. Having said that, we have good confidence with the exhibit batches we have now seen on a couple of our pipeline products that we're going to see an acceleration in the area. We expect that the key pipeline products will see exhibit batches this year for the two other non-MIBG key pipeline products.
Okay.
Moving to FY28 for the third question that you asked. As we look at FY28, I think there's three things I would think about. Number one, we've got a depressed FY27 because in the first half, our highest margin products are in short supply. Mm. That issue will be alleviated in FY28, and therefore you should see a return to a more regular impact, right? Just to give you a sense, the revenue impact from the revenue impact in H1 is about US 14 million on that spec. So it's a pretty big number, right? Number two, RubyFill continues to expand rapidly, both in market size, market share, and in price. And so we continue to have a lot of faith that that business will continue to grow in the range that it has been growing, the 30%+ range. Finally, as we think about our pipeline landing, the first year of NDAs is normally, you know, ramp years. So you should expect to see an investment in sales and marketing as we ramp those NDAs towards their peak potential. I hope that answers your question. I can't give specific numerical guidance, but I hope that answers the question.
Just a follow-up on this. So MIBG, again, because of the orphan drug status, we could expect an accelerated approval to come through.
That is correct. We will have an accelerated review for MIBG because of its orphan drug designation.
Got it. That was helpful. And again, a feedback to the management. We continue with this quarterly, if not quarterly, maybe half yearly sort of a con call. Helps everyone better understand the company. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question is a text question from Aditya Chera of InCred Asset Management. His question says, can you talk about capital structure, free cash flow generation, and how return on equity will improve? Quantify capex for FY27 and FY28, and whether there will be deleveraging in next 24 months.
Yeah, thanks for the question. FY26, we have done a capex of 1,668 crores. In FY27, we are looking at a similar capex to FY26. The key projects include Spokane Line 4, where we have done almost $200 million capex and 34 is remaining here. Montreal Line 5, the capex is going on, 27 has been done, 87 is around pending there. Pet Pharmacy is also growing in capex, 22 is done, 53 is pending there. So capex cycle is going on as anticipated and as planned. Once this capex cycle is over, and once we land up in FY27 and the line 3 comes in commercial production, we can see a lot of free cash flow coming in from the commercialization of product at line 3 and tech transfer revenue coming in on line 4. Once these line 3 and line 4 revenue starts coming in, we can see positive cash flows coming into the system, and that will help reduce our overall debt from the system. And as regards debt, net debt, we are committed to achieve net debt by 2030. And you can see this reduction in net debt from FY28 onwards. And we stand committed to our vision of getting net debt zero by FY30. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Anusha. We take next question again from the line of Mr. Aditya Chandra from InCred Asset Management. Aditya wants to understand the Line 3 tech transfer revenues and its contribution or impact in revenue and EBITDA in FY26 and whether it will sustain in FY27. Requesting Chris, if you can take that.
Thanks for the question. So the answer is yes. We expect to generate approximately $60 to $80 million in revenue from Line 3 as we move into FY27, predominantly coming from the tech transfers of the products that I mentioned. Margins will be similar to FY26 for the overall Spokane business, including Line 1 and Line 2. And this is due to the full cost being realized specifically for Line 3. Thereafter, from that point forward, however, we do expect to see the margin improvement as the line reaches as line 3 reaches full utilization and those costs are fully absorbed across the Spokane lines. What I will say is the success for that and the continued acceleration is due to those 10 plus products that I did mention earlier, including one of the world's largest oncology products that we onboarded specifically on Line 3. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. A quick reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may either click on the raise hand icon or send a text question via the Q&A tab. We take our next question. That's a follow-up from Shrikant Akolkar of Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions again. Just to follow up on MIBG, now this is a rare disorder drug. Just wondering if it will be eligible for the priority review voucher according to the U.S. government plan.
Thank you for your question. At this stage, we are speaking with regulatory consultants about that. There is a previous I-131 MIBG product approved in the market by the name of Azedra. That product is discontinued and does not have any impact on our commercial standing. However, its previous approval does muddy the water on our ability to get a priority review voucher. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Yeah, that is very helpful. Second follow-up on MIBG, how should we think about the approval? Because you said it will be potential accelerated approval. So how are we thinking of the approval timelines and the commercialization? Are we going to do the launch on our own or we are thinking of licensing this out to other partners?
Thank you again, Shrikant, for your question. First, on approval timelines, an accelerated review suggests a six-month review should there be no gaps in our filing. In terms of your second question, we expect to launch this product ourselves. Our deep downstream capability with radiopharmacies, as well as our deep commercial capabilities and our experience, many years of supporting physicians, our EAP program, gives us a unique ability to bring to market MIBG, and we think we are the best positioned commercialization vehicle for that asset. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And two more questions. One is on RubyFill. So we have seen a very strong performance this year, and we keep reading about the increasing installations of RubyFill in the US. So can you please explain how does that work, that when you have installations done, then how should we think of the incoming revenue for next 2-3 years? And is there additional cost that you have to incur when you are doing a lot of installations in the US? Thank you.
Thank you, Shrikant, for the question. First, on RubyFill and its growth, I think it's important to realize that RubyFill is in a very good place because the market is growing at roughly 10%. And together with the market growing, our market share is also growing. The reason that's really helpful is because it means that all boats are floating and you're able to create a positive pricing momentum, and there's positive reimbursement momentum in the US market as well. So we feel really good about RubyFill. Now, to your second question, RubyFill is what I would think of as a razor blade model. Once we install the elution system, in my analogy, the razor, then every 6 to 7 weeks, we are delivering a generator, and that is essentially an annuity that we get every 7 weeks. We are not disclosing pricing or revenue at the generator level on this call. Finally, with regard to resourcing, RubyFill has three kinds of resources around it. There is a sales structure, of course. There is a support structure in terms of engineering and breakfix, and there's a support structure in terms of clinical applications and clinical guidance, training, and reading of scripts, etc. Some of those scale like breakfix with the infrastructure. Others like sales do not scale. But everything benefits from scale because most of it is on a geographic model. So as you get more density in geographies, you get more efficiencies in the supply chain and in the support infrastructure.
Understood. Last question on allergy business. Would it be possible to provide the split of the US and non-US business in the allergy?
US and non-US, you can do.
So, thank you for the question. This is Anush. So, split of US and non-US, about 90% is US and about 8 to 10% is non-US.
Okay. And can you talk about the drivers for this business to grow? The U.S. business, the U.S. allergy market is somehow capped at a certain level. So there's a limit for the US business in allergy to grow. So if you can talk about both the segments, US and non-US, what are the drivers and how we are taking care to grow going forward? Thank you.
Shrikant, hi. This is Vivek here. The allergy business in the US is growing at about 3 to 4%, 5% maybe. And we are in that business in the US gaining share. So our revenues are growing a bit faster than that. That's the limit to which that business in the US is growing. The drivers for growth is obviously higher share that we are gaining, you know, expanding into non-US markets. So our share in Europe is very low. We are making a concerted effort to grow that number. And also we keep exploring other adjacencies in the allergy business, which are not the same product, but similar products which go into the same channel. And so our business development is always looking out for products which go into the same channel to see if you can leverage our sales force, our front-end sales force, and grow our revenue further.
Just one follow-up on the allergy business. So if you see FY25, we did about 3% growth, but FY26 has been 12% growth. So what really changed in the structure of the business, or what really worked in FY26?
So for FY26, major driver is the growth in the non-US markets, or higher sales, higher volumes in the non-US market, and plus little bit of higher share in the US market.
Okay, would you quantify how big the covered market for us will be in the European region?
I'll have Pankaj circle back to you on this one, on the exact size of the European market.
No problem. Thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up from Vishal Manchanda of Systematics. Please go ahead.
Hi, my question is on radio pharmacies that you're setting up, the paid pharmacies. So are they on track for commercialization next year?
Thank you for the question. Our pet pharmacies, which we are standing up, the first of them should be commercialized next year. The first three of them, we will see a couple that may go over into the next year, but we're just working through qualification timelines, and we're a little dependent on when the FDA comes in to be able to approve the sites. As you can imagine, since these are GMP sites, we need to ensure that the FDA comes in for a PAI in order to start commercial production, which gives us a little bit of variability.
And any timelines as to how long they can take to reach their full potential?
We are contracting all of our cyclotrons now. We expect that in market, we will need to earn doses. And if we look at other cyclotrons and how they have how they've been ramping up, they've taken about 3 to 4 years to reach P.
Okay. And on radio pharma, what percentage of your revenues are dependent on the Montreal facility?
I don't think we're disclosing at that level of granularity on this call, unfortunately.
Okay. And just two questions on the financial side. What is the net debt today, and what would be the tax rate going forward?
Yeah. So net debt is 1900 from what was today. And like I said in earlier answer also, we see this net debt going down from FY28 onwards when we have line 3 and line 4 going in revenue and EBITDA there. And what we committed for FY30, we stand committed to that, and we try to take net debt to zero by FY2013. Second question on the tax rate. See, here our tax rate is around 33%. We have some unshielded expenses due to which tax rate is higher than 33%. It shall continue to go down as absolute PBT continues to go up. So going forward, once our margins improve by line 3, line 4, we will see this tax rate going down gradually.
Got it, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may click on the raise hand icon again. We have a text question from Aditya Chera of InCred Asset Management. His question is, sequentially, there was no material impact seen in radio pharma revenues. Whether the lower production impact will be profound in H1 FY27?
Ashir, would you like to take that?
So let me just make sure I understand that question. You broke up slightly. The question is, there was no material impact in second half. Sequentially, should we expect more in the first half? Is that correct?
Yes. So the question is, there is no material impact on the revenue side. So going forward in the first half of FY27, will the lower production have a profound impact?
I think the answer is in the margin mix here. As our revenue increases, it is driven primarily by our Ruby Fills franchise, and that revenue does not have the same margin, as I said earlier, as our SPECT franchise. To repeat my earlier comment, we expect that in the first half, we will see a revenue impact from SPECT shortages of approximately USD 14 million. That is a very high margin business. And that's the first half impact. In the second half, we expect that to be normalized.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may click on the raise hand icon. We will wait for a few seconds to check if anyone wants to join the queue. Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, actually, we just got a question. So I'm going to go back to the participant. That's Shrikant Akolkar of Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Just because there was a time. So just on the console level, this year we have done about 15.
Shrikant, we can't hear you. Could you please repeat your question and hold the mic a little closer to you?
I hope I'm audible now.
Better.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. So I was just wondering that for the full year FY26, we have done about 15.5% margins. So how should we think at the consolidated level, the performance on the top line and EBITDA?
Yeah, Shrikant, you're talking about FY27.
The EBITDA margin, not the EBITDA.
Thanks for the question. So we expect growth momentum to further strengthen FY27. In terms of EBITDA margin, it shall be a story of two halves. As the production at CMO Montreal stabilizes, we expect EBITDA margin to strengthen in H2 FY27. H1 FY27 EBITDA margin shall be temporarily impacted by the supply shortage of spec products. So you can see like H1, we can see a little lower margin, but F2 will see a higher margins, which will be a representative of margins going forward in FY28 onwards. Because that will be a normal EBITDA margin once our Montreal production comes on stream and it is back to normal. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, partially. Just, you know, if you can quantify it, if some numbers, as in what can be the difference between the first half and second half margin. And I can tell you why. Because the CDMO business will see commercials probably in the fourth quarter. So that may be, I think, high margin. But in the first half, we have this Montreal issue. So just in any you got this.
Yeah, see, I'm not supposed to say the exact margins.
Yeah.
But but as you are asking it again and again, so I can see S2 margins would be in the range of 17 to 18%. So that should give you an idea that how will FY28 spell out going forward from there on.
Understood. This is helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of the Q&A session. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the leadership team, I would like to thank you for your time and for your continued interest in Jubilant Pharmova Limited. Should you have any follow-up queries that were not addressed, feel free to reach out to the investor relations team. Thank you and have a good day. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.